I know, you know, that's what I was thinking too. I was like, I think I have a good reason, you know.
Oh my God, very good.
Call the meeting to order. Please join me in pledge allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Keeper?
Present.
Ms. Mankiewicz is asked to be excused. Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. Proto?
Yo.
What's up, what's up? I should call my what's up.
Well, man.
Do I have to follow that?
Come on, Tank.
Mr. Randall?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Does that mean you read email now?
I'm here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Present.
Mr. Sigler has asked to be excused. Mr. Stevenson?
Here.
Who is it? I didn't say that.
That's Mr. Stevenson.
Who is Mr.
I'm present.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Mr. Hattery has asked to be excused. Mr. Klinkelair?
Here.
11 members present.
Presentation. Petitions, communications, and notices?
Communications are on the desk.
We have no announcements or special orders of the day. We'll move to service of the floor from the public. Do we have anyone who would like to speak? Seeing none, we'll move to privilege of the floor for county legislators. Carol Chalk.
I have several things. I just want to let you know the County Office for the Aging is having their annual luncheon on May 22nd. For those of you who plan in advance, anybody who'd like to come with me, let me know. And they're still looking for honorees. If there are people that you know of, I'm happy to take them to the committee or give you the form. It'll be in your box eventually. I attended two very interesting lectures. On February 22nd, I attended a lecture by Ann Markison. She's a regional planner and professor who has held many distinguished positions and awards. She currently directs the University of Minnesota's Project on Regional Industrial Economics, PRIE, at the Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. And she's well known for her studies of regional economic development. She currently looks in particular at the role of arts and of artists in building the economic development of a given locale and the importance for the public good in consciously seeking such activity. She was brought in at Cornell. And it was particularly striking how much of what she presented we're already as strong, and that she's recommending around the nation, we're already doing here. And it was interesting to see, because we know in our veins, in our core spirits, that it's good for adults, children, and teens to be exposed to arts, music, theater, dance, thought, or culture of any sort, whether highbrow or lowbrow, I might add. Even more true when a higher percentage of a community actually gets involved in arts in their own lives, especially when our youth do so. And Ann Markison is working to back up that intuition that we have about that with research. She studies whether the arts add to the economic base of the community. She's finding out that it most certainly does add. She's putting numbers behind that, census data and tax base kind of numbers. Further, she's looking at what kind of public support for the arts is most effective. For example, her work has shown that in many areas, distributed programs that provide many opportunities for smaller-scale arts accessible to many participants has been more effective than targeting support to only one high-profile project. You know, the Guggenheim Museum worked in Bilbao, but in certain cities across the United States where they've built isolated huge things, it's not attracting the same kind of activity that the kind of things we do here. So the good news is that Tompkins County is really on target. the kinds of things she pointed out and are recommending to communities, like their arts trail. So our Greater Ithaca Art Trail, our supportive and active CDB, our various partnerships in the arts. I mean, all of these things were on her lists. Multiple small museums she recommended with hands-on activities, music alternatives, festivals, restoration of downtown historic theaters. She's been involved in several projects like that. And this is one we clearly, looking at the research, we're getting right. She pointed to and is recommending the use of occupancy tax for distributed grants programs that present alternative funding streams. I'll continue to follow her studies. I've suggested to TCAD and or to CAP that they look for an intern to use our own census data and apply the model that she's developed to compare our statistics to other communities across the country. And that should be interesting if they get to follow through on that. If I may, on one more, shorter, I also attended the New York State Tax Policy and 2008-09 Budget Implications Session by Frank Morrow of the Fiscal Policy Institute and Ron Deutsch of New Yorkers for Fiscal Fairness. And others might, I know Martha was there, Steve was there, might have more to say on the budget implications. I was struck in particular by Frank Morrow's background that I think you've had occasion to look at before, but I will pass out as a review. He talked about people asking whether New Yorkers are overtaxed and saying that the question should more appropriately be which New Yorkers are overtaxed and why. His Fiscal Policy Institute looked at the overall state tax burden, including sales tax, property tax, and other taxes, as well as it, you know, added to the income tax. And they came up with this one-page neat little chart that make it quite clear that the percentage of people's income going to pay taxes goes down at almost every level as people's income goes up. People in the top 1% of taxpayers are paying 6.5% of their income in state income taxes, in state taxes, counting all state taxes, while the bottom 20% pay a total of 12.6% of their incomes. So I have about 7 copies of this so people can look at it or take it. And that's changed over the past 30 years. New York State has shifted the tax burden so that 95% of us are paying more taxes than we would have in the old system, while the top 5% of the population income are paying less taxes. And they're making some headway. The Better Chance budget campaign is building bipartisan support the state level for a set of measures that includes an increase at the top marginal rates in particular of the New York State personal income tax that I think is interesting. They've got other measures as well. That's what I've got. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Carol. Jim Dennis, then Tyke.
I'd like to give props to the Cornell men's basketball team. It isn't often that a team from the Ivies makes it. Well, it is often. They get in every year. It's not often Cornell gets there. And I think that is a something to be recognized. These people are student athletes. They actually have to go home and do their work and then go to practice. And some of the top 20 teams are not doing that for sure. So I think under Coach Donahue, I believe, and a 7-foot young man from nearby, Cornell has done quite well for themselves. I'm not certain that I wouldn't bet on them to win the championship, but stranger things have happened. The other thing that I want to bring up is the Family Reading Partnership, and you know, I know you're going to love this. They're having their big gala, Red Hot Gala, March 15th at Statler. Tickets are $100 a pop, and Lord, I'd love to see some of you there. And they have, over the past 10 years, it's their 10-year anniversary, they've given away over 200,000 books to the children of Tompkins County in all schools, all school districts, and virtually every child born in the county. So they're celebrating their 10 years in business.
Thank you, Jim. Tyke?
Yeah, I was just in regards to Carol needing nominations for the Office of the Aging. I'd really like to throw in our senior legislator's name, Frank Proto, for consideration.
Okay.
Yo.
Frank, are you ready for an aged award?
I'll comment on the privilege of the floor when it's my turn.
Go ahead.
Okay. Carol, I think I'm already on the lifelong as liaison, but I don't think I'm the oldest person in the room, and I won't embarrass that person by saying anything. We'll talk. Thanks, Tyke. You're always the rock for me. In the same vein as Jim congratulated the men's basketball team, I think it's also important that we recognize that this past weekend Cornell had the Cornell men won for the fourth time the heptagonal meet, and the Cornell women, who had had that title for six times, unfortunately felt they were beaten this time. But both the women and men's track and field teams did very well. One other item. We have a lot of local businesses that do a lot for the community and often go unrecognized. And I want to take a minute just to recognize one, in case you missed it. The PNC supermarket this past weekend donated 5% of their total proceeds. This time it went to Hospicare. And I know Wegmans has done similar things in the past, and I think it's appropriate to recognize some of the locals for some of the things that never make it to the media. And it was quite a worthwhile opportunity for anybody who shops at those markets. And in an effort to clarify something that my esteemed and your esteemed colleague Jim Dennis has brought up in the past, this will come as a shock, I'm sure, to some of you. I do have an email address, and I'm not going to give it to you, but it's the county email address. And I have, from time to time, sent emails to some of you. Jim has one that he's displaying in an appropriate place at his home. But just to clarify, and I am receiving your emails, by the way. I'm up to number 264 because they go back that far. But I thought that Jim would get a kick out of that. How'd the sock hop go, by the way?
Thank you, Frank. Martha.
I got a couple things. One is Housing Opportunity Fair put on by the Ithaca Board of Realtors. They did this last year, I believe, and it's Saturday, March 15th, 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock at the Ithaca High School cafeteria. Help for anyone thinking about buying a house. Information on a variety of home buying opportunities. And I think especially in this kind of crazy market, it's, if somebody's interested in doing that, it's a good place to get information so you know what you're doing. And related to housing, I often come here with bad news about homeless emergency bed nights, the shelter. I'm delighted to say we have good news. At the last Homeless and Housing Task Force meeting, the 2007 statistics were handed out. 2006 set a record at 16,083 bed nights. That means how many nights per person. I mean, that was like the total number in the three different shelters. 16,000. In 2007, we had 11,000 bed nights. And I'll copy the graph for you, but it looks like this. It like really drops right off there. And it's, I talked to Nancy Burstyn about it from the Human Services Coalition. They're going to be looking into why. This is one of those questions of you really like to know why something works well and what's happening that's different, but I'm hoping that some of our efforts are starting to pay off. So I just thought that was kind of exciting. Something else that's exciting comes up on March 29th, the annual Sister Friends, March 28th, Friday, Sister Friends Luncheon for women in Tompkins County and girls and high school students, and tickets are $15. I have some right here. It's a great event, Clarion Hotel, 11 a.m. to 1:30. It's probably the most diverse event that sort of happens every year, all different kinds of folks there, and it's with women vendors. The speaker this year is the keynote speaker is Jalaja Bonheim, who's going to talk about... What?
Jalaja.
Okay, thank you.
She's
what? Okay. she does work with Israeli and Palestinian women on sort of peacemaking, and called Circle Work. So she's going to be talking at the event. So March 28th at the Clarion Hotel. Tickets are available at GAC and the Multicultural Resource Center.
Thank you, Martha. Julie Kiefer.
The American Society of Newspaper Editors has named March 16th through 22nd of this year Sunshine Week, which is a week-long assertion of the public's right to know what its government is doing. So I look forward to seeing what our local newspapers have in store for us that week. But I'm sorry that I didn't know about this earlier, because I wish we were, as a legislature, proclaiming that week, Sunshine Week, since I think as a government we strongly believe and try to be open about our processes. I just wanted to let the public know about this. It's a good week.
Thanks. Anyone else? If not, we'll move on to a report from municipal officials. I believe Herb is here from the town of Ithaca. Welcome, Herb.
Thank you. Yo, Frank. thanks for the mention of the track team. I volunteered all weekend at the HEPS, and the place rocked as much as the hockey rink or the basketball arena, so it was really a great event, so I'm glad you mentioned that. Yes, I'm Herb Engman, town supervisor of the town of Ithaca, and I'm sorry it's taken me 2 months to walk the one block from Town Hall over to here, but I had conflicts, and thanks to Karen Billings, our wonderful new town clerk, who appeared, I believe, in January, and Will Burbank last month. I wanted to mention just quickly three things that are happening in the town that might be of interest. One is we have a proposal for an assisted living facility, 80 beds, Medicaid assisted. And I think this is a very important thing for the community. We very much would like to see this facility be here. It's a private firm that wants to put it up. And so we've been talking with Ed Marks, among others, about where an appropriate location would be for this facility, because the two sites that have been proposed so far really aren't environmentally appropriate or would sort of stimulate some sprawl development that we're trying to avoid. So we're working on that, and thank the county for helping us look for an appropriate site. The second issue is that we're struggling a good deal with is stormwater management. This is an unfunded mandate from the state, but in one sense it's a very good one. The town of Ithaca and the city of Ithaca spent millions of dollars upgrading the sewage treatment plant for phosphorus removal. And now, of course, we're talking about spending millions more of taxpayers' dollars on dredging the inlet. And if we can keep the dirt where it belongs, upstream, through these sorts of stormwater management laws, then we will have to spend a lot less money in the future doing this remediation after the damage has already occurred. We will need the help of all the highway departments, including the county and the state in this, because the scooping out of drainage dishes and other things that aren't properly regulated and maintained for erosion control is a continuing problem, and so everybody's going to have to help with this. The other thing I wanted to mention was that we've had an upsurge in neighborhood associations being developed in the town. We've had two new ones crop up recently, and we think this is a wonderful indication of people eager to participate in the democratic process, and we appreciate and look forward to working with those groups. So I just wanted to mention a few things, and if there are any questions about that or anything else about the town of Ithaca, I'd be glad to answer them.
Thank you, Herb. I really like this 3 points, ask questions, kind of highlights report, really on what Mark.
A question for Herb?
Sure.
Herb, some of us used to officiate at the HEPS with Bob Kane and in the old days Charlie Treeman in his tails and his top hat. However, can you say anything more about that 80-bed facility?
It's a facility that is being proposed by an organization that already owns two similar facilities in New York State. And they have applied to the state for the support that's needed. You have to apply for the 80-bed allocation. And we've checked with the providers of these sorts of services locally, and they say there isn't any duplication with any other facility that exists in the county right now. And this would be in addition to. The whole purpose, from the state's perspective, is to keep people out of nursing homes until they have to go to nursing homes. The assisted living facility means they can't live on their own very well anymore, but they don't yet need the intense care of a nursing home. So it's cheaper for the state to do it this way. But we think it's a wonderful transition also for the individuals involved, and thus we're supportive of it. So as soon as we can find an appropriate location, I think it should move forward fairly quickly.
Thank you.
Thanks again, Herb. We're going to move on to the presentation. You can get out from your red packets, Board of Elections handout. And I think Elizabeth Cree and Tom Belangeli are here to walk us through that and give us a quick summary.
Good evening.
Thank you for coming.
After 5 years, we finally have a voting machine. I'm sorry. We only have one here to demonstrate, but because of the strict restrictions, they're finally just been able to go to production. So right now, they are manufacturing around New York State. At this point, they're different locations. I'm going to talk about what's ahead for 2008 with our voting machine, and then Tom will be talking about 2009. As you can see, there's a picture on your pamphlet. Excuse me. And the machine that we're using this year, first of all, let me tell you, there'll be two systems we're using this year. We're still using our lever machines this year. And then the second machine we'll be using is called a ballot marking device. The ballot marking device is for any person with a disability to be able to vote on it in the spirit of HAVA independently like any other voter. As you can see from the picture, there's an actual full-face ballot on the machine. They can use different handheld devices, there's foot health devices, and there's also even a sip and puff straw for someone that might be a paraplegic. So there shouldn't be any disability that is not covered by this voting machine. This year, what will happen is once a person with a disability votes on it, the machine will actually print a ballot at the polling place for them, which will be then counted at night by hand in our tally for the results. It's more like an emergency ballot at this point. And then next year, Tom will explain that. But if there's any questions on this, the only change that you'll see is that there'll be two different machines at the polling site. And we'll need extra election inspectors so that we can man both machines.
The machines that we're getting.
Elizabeth, I think Dooley had a quick question.
Will other voters be able to use the ballot marking device if they so choose?
Yes. Anyone can use the other machine.
Okay. Thanks.
Yep.
The machine that we're getting, it's manufactured by Sequoia. It's based on a design from a Canadian company called Dominion. And so we're under mandate right now to provide a ballot marking device in every poll site this fall. So that's the part of the machine we're going to be using. If you go to the second part of your fold-out or brochure on page 3, you'll see the other side of the machine. It's not much to look at. Basically, it's a ballot scanner.
That will not be activated as part of this year's voting. The machine is still going through certification from the state, but we fully expect it will be certified that we can use it in 2009 as our final HAVA solution machine. And basically, if you've been following are trying to find a machine, this is a ballot scanner. The voters will be given a paper ballot, which basically just has the offices and little circles that they'll color in to indicate their voting choices. Probably will have like little tables and booths set up so they can do that independently, then approach the machine, insert the ballot. The machine then scans the ballot. It tabulates the offices. It'll also notify the voter if they've undervoted or overvoted, or if there is some type of a problem with the paper. The voter can then decide whether a lot of voters purposely undervote. They don't want to vote for a proposition or something. They'll have the option, though, at that point to say accept it as it is or kick it back and fix it. Then the ballot drops into the box. If you go to our website, there's color pictures of these. It's a little bit easier to see. It drops into the box, and at the end of the night, we'll be able to collect the ballots. And we will be doing an audit. There's state requirements to look at what the tabulator says versus what the actual count is. The other thing that really impresses about this particular scanner is that in addition to doing the tabulation, it also takes a picture of each ballot that goes through and then lets us know how it counted it. Now, it's not tied to the voter. There's no way people worry about, know how I vote. It's done in a way to mix the numbers up. But post-election, you have the option now of going in and looking at each ballot that's scanned in and see what the machine said. So if there's a problem, we could see, the machine, every time someone checked A3, thought it was A4 or something. That would be really obvious. It'll come up. So it's something that I don't think there was any other system that offered that type of capability. The machine also has like redundant memory in it that's keeping track of what's going on so that we can access results that way. And of course, the final always backup is that you can hand count the paper ballots. The scanner itself isn't much to look at. If you go to page 4, there's a little bit of a breakdown of the machine. Basically, the voter is just going to insert the ballot. They'll be prompted, to cast the ballot, push the button. If there's a problem, it'll come up and say, like I said, you undervoted, you overvoted, and you go from there. You do see a little thing that says internal printer. That's just a thermal printer that's going to give us zero totals to start and totals at the end of the night. That's not a verifiable paper trail. The paper trail is actually the ballot itself that they're voting on. Any questions? Oh, another thing I just want to mention about this machine that we were excited about, and one of the reasons we're really sure it's going to pass certification, is that unlike some other machines, it does use open source software. It's a Linux-based system. So that's a hurdle that we really wonder if some of the other machines that are being temporarily approved to get through the ballot marking period are actually going to get through final certification, because Microsoft has shown no indication they're ever going to give up any of their programming. So, any questions?
Martha.
Yes, Martha. How much per machine? I'm looking
it's
at that.
$11,500 per machine. But as Tom spoke about, it's for both plans. It's both for 2008 and 2009.
Okay, so one machine.
So it's for 5 years, yes, it's one machine.
One machine per precinct?
Yeah, per polling site.
Per polling site.
So right now we're in the middle of trying to consolidate some districts so that we can save money on purchasing the voting machines.
And since voters can, does your plan include those little privacy tables so a number of people can vote at once and don't have to hurry each other? And
yeah, this presentation was perfect timing, because if you watch the news today, they're voting in Ohio, and if you see, they were showing pictures of a gymnasium set up, and all behind the inspector tables, they had a ton of inspector booths lined up. Mm-hmm. So you can just go and vote your ballot, and then what you do is hand it to the inspector, or you put your ballot in the machine yourself, but you'll have a privacy sleeve or like a folder to, you know, keep the privacy of your ballot secret.
Yeah, I've seen these work in New Hampshire, and it's just a no-brainer. I'm so pleased that this has finally come to pass. And I was just wondering, I heard about Ohio, and I mean, this is totally other subject, but the one of the things that they are, one of the reforms they've put into place is that, I guess they call it no-fault absentee voting, so that you don't have to have, you don't have to actually be out of the county. You can just get an absentee ballot. I mean, for example, people who are actually working on an election that, you know, might have trouble actually voting. So do you think there's anything like that that might be coming down the pike, those kinds of changes?
I think at this point we would like that. Both commissioners, I know Steve has expressed opinion in that as well, and in favor of it, but until the legislators pass it, I'm not sure.
Well, this is terrific. Really, thank you.
Any other questions? Carol Chong?
Yeah, I just want, you mentioned the website for people at home. It's www.votetompkins.com.
Votetompkins.com, thank you.
And Julie Kiefer?
The our New York State Legislature did require safeguards that make me feel good, open source code being one of them. The federal requirements to certify are less clear to me, and I don't know if they have been finalized or updated, or whether if a machine is okay by federal standards but doesn't meet our New York State standards, will we have to accept it anyway? Do you have any idea about those questions?
Well, the federal standards haven't met to New York State standards, actually, and that's another reason why we picked this particular machine, because it's going to meet, it meets the standards now and what they think the federal standards will be.
The feds haven't updated their standards still. Okay.
Frank Proto.
Thank you for doing this, the both of you, but a question not necessarily about the machines, but about outreach to the public. I know this wasn't supposed to be a major presentation on what the plan is, but we all just came through the three-year assessment change, and even though there's been an effort over the last year to reach out and make sure people were aware that this change was going to happen, we're still getting a million questions, and the assessor's office is going crazy over there. During the next year, what would be the plan for educating the public on the machines that will be used in 2009?
We are supposed to receive 10% of the ballot marking devices sometime next month. And our plan was to put it right in the Finger Lakes Independent Center. We work very closely with them over at Lifelong, different places that we could. We're not going to do full voter outreach this year because, honestly, we can't. We just don't. Our primaries alone in February were much greater than we ever thought they would. The excitement started, and I just think that even if they were certified to Plan A, some of the counties are thinking about going straight to Plan A. I think it would be too much this year with all the participation going on.
But do you think the major effort for outreach to the public would be in 2009?
Yes, absolutely, 2009. And believe it or not, probably the villages will be voting on the new machine first before we ever get to our primary to countywide to vote on them. So we'll have to work with the villages and start that way, but it might be a great way to start. And hopefully, we're hoping that the schools will also use our voting machines.
Well, some of us are intimately concerned about the 2009 election. So at least 15 of us probably will be following that one closely. So whatever you can do to educate the public would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, we're going to need a lot of help from a lot of different agencies. And the only other thing that I think you wanted us to mention was about the storage.
Yes,
we're looking for storage, and that's on the last page. We went to government operations, and we've been working closely with Steve Witcher. These machines are electronic. They do have to have maintenance throughout the year on them, different types of maintenance. And currently, we are looking for a suitable location where we can work on them and have them displayed. And as Dooley said, you know, have a very open process with them.
Good question on that.
Sure, Frank. Mike,
Elizabeth or Tom. In reading that memo, it appeared that all the machines would be brought back to one central location because it needs to be secure, climate controlled, et cetera, et cetera. Does that mean the county is going to have to arrange for transport of these machines for every election, including school elections?
Well, we've been transferring all the lever machines right now. We've been centralized for 2 years. Right. And it's same procedure with these new voting machines.
I mean,
the school will be paying for their own transportation. But we put in already a process where if they're going to be using the new machines, that they have to use our technicians and an approved system to move the machines, and probably we'll move them and charge them back for that.
Well, some of the locations that the voting takes place are not necessarily climate controlled. I mean, not that the machines have to be when they're voting. I don't know if that's a requirement. It doesn't sound like it. But will there be some effort made by your department to go out and examine the polling places prior to installing the machines to make sure that everything, you know, some places you have to carry them up a ramp or whatever it happens to be?
We actually are going to have to visit every single polling site this year because we have to figure out the polling place layout now that we're going to have two different types of machines
right.
And how we're going to set up the extra inspector tables. We've had some issues, but I think that we've taken care of them because our inspectors are there all day. They're working 17 hours a day with some mostly heat issues, not enough heat for the inspectors, so we've been working on that.
I think the town of
space requirements in 2009, just like we are going to have extra tables set up with little booths so that people can mark their ballots. So there's a few spaces that could be pretty tight fits right now. So where we are, with that in mind, we're examining our spaces, seeing what we can use. Plus, as Elizabeth mentioned, we're trying to consolidate, get down to less places in general that we can use because that'll just take some of the burden off of it.
And one final question, Martha.
You said that GO is looking at the storage space at this 4,200 square feet. This issue is there? Do you think we have something already that'll work? Or?
Not really.
Town of Ithaca has a lot of space in its basement, and I'm sure Herb would be wonderful.
We already checked that out.
Well, thank you again, Elizabeth and Tom. And if people have more questions, they can follow up afterwards. For Chair's report, I'm just going to highlight that you did get in your red packets the implications for Tompkins County, some of the analysis regarding this proposed state budget by Governor Pritzker, and did attend a meeting with Senator Winter on Friday the 22nd, where he did analysis of the budget from his perspective. I have an extra packet of that if people want it. We do have some additional meetings coming up if people are available to come to. We have a meeting with R. Curry coming up on the 17th, which I've alerted you all about, and the Upstate Commission, this New York State Commission on Property Tax Relief, will have a hearing in Syracuse on the 10th of April, which I think you all got copies of as well. If you want to have all of us get together and make a statement there, we can probably arrange that. I also want to say thank you very much to the search committee. They've, at this juncture, delivered us final candidates, which we'll be starting to interview this week and next. And I think it was an exemplary process for 15 people to work through, both the outreach, but also the interview of the candidates and give us really highly qualified candidates. So thank you very much, Jim, for shepherding that. And thanks to the entire committee, community members, and county staff for all their work. In terms of chair's appointments, I think it's on your appointment list on the bottom, but I'll simply highlight that I'll be appointing Leslie Bean Claiborne to the Workforce Investment Board. As a non-voting member, Carol Chalk to Cooperative Extension, the Extension Service. Leslie will be, she already is on, but she will be officially appointed to the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Although you're chairing it, we realized you hadn't been actually appointed, Leslie. And then Carol Chalk has asked, and I've agreed to move her from Human Resources Committee to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. And I will then serve as now vacancies, so to speak, on the Public Safety Committee, and there's a vacancy on Human Resources Committee as of this moment, and I'll serve in those capacities until we see who's elected to fill District 12. Those are my appointments. We'll move on to reports from County Administrator.
No report.
And County Attorney.
No report.
And Finance Director, David Squires.
I just want to report two things. One, we had financing last week. We sold $995,000 of bond anticipation notes at a rate of 2.06%. HSBC was second place in the offering. There was six bidders. The J.P. Morgan Chase was the low bidder. It ranged from 2.06 to 3.23. I want to bring up an interesting presentation I attended in Syracuse. Tucked in the budget is reform of the way the state of New York collects the motor fuel tax. And what the state is, in the budget to change the county's sales tax, remove it from the sales tax collection, and make it a motor fuel excess tax, which we would share from New York State. The state's doing this because it's a good government thing, because it's a really Byzantine method of collecting motor fuel taxes, and so they're proposing to take and collect at the terminal a tax for all recipients at one point, and then throughout the process every vendor would take a credit for paying the tax, but it has significant consequences in the way the state would ultimately distribute this revenue to the counties, because it unbundles it from the sales tax system. And I don't think that they have a definitive answer on how they're going to do that yet. But the state has an incentive to do this, because right now the state excise, most of the taxes are cents per gallon. Sales tax is percent of the price. So the state is changing the law that there would be an inflationary adjustment for the cents per gallon that would benefit them, and I'm told that if this reform passes within the budget, the state is looking at a $70 million gain. Now, it's not clear on how it will affect us, because they are talking about guaranteeing us a based upon an index so that we're held harmless. But our tax would be done away with as a percentage, and it would be included in this cents per gallon excise tax that's imposed. It's not a small amount for the county. I mean, we get about $4 million of sales tax revenue from motor fuel sales. And if it's distributed differently and it's not identified like the sales tax is right now based upon the origin of sale, it could create some administrative difficulties. It's in the state budget, and the state has a great incentive to pass it, because it's $70 million new revenue.
Martha, and then Frank.
$70 million new revenue comes from somewhere. Would that be from buyers of fuel, or is it out of the allocation that counties get?
The $70 million accrues to New York State.
No, where does it come from?
Well, they say that this is going to improve the collection, because the tax is going to be extracted at the point where it's the gasoline is picked up from.
Wholesale.
Rather than each retailer filing a report saying, I sold so much, owe sales tax. So they think that it's going to close a lot of loopholes. And the reason why they're really touting this, because it's really a nightmare system when you think that there's about six different taxes that are imposed upon gasoline. And the sales tax is a particular problem, because every day the price of gasoline changes. The percent, the cents per gallon doesn't change, but it's the sales tax that's a real problem for reporting on fuel sales.
I saw someone else's hand. Sorry. Frank Frodo.
David, is it still part of our equation that the utilities provide the largest piece of the sales tax collection for the county?
The largest single category would be energy. Right.
And this is part of that.
So it is part of it, yes.
And what you mentioned that this is part of it, unless I've misheard you, it's part of the governor's proposed
budget. It's in the governor's budget. And I'm told that it will result in the change. There's some change in the sales tax law that will essentially make it no longer a sales tax on fuel. It's not the counties are given an option about this. It's if it passes, it's going to be taken out of the sales tax, taxation and finance, collection of sales tax, and collected in another way.
Is that one part two? Is there we have a number of resolutions on the agenda tonight with regard to the budget and the impact on various departments. Is this something that we ought to do something about and review very quickly, and perhaps speak to NYSAC about because of not knowing what the true impact? Do you really believe that the net effect on the counties is going to be zero? You don't have to answer that, by the way.
Steve, you had a comment?
Well, part of the proposal, I believe, is a 5% cap on, even though they're holding us harmless, that they would cap our sales tax collection or the excess tax collection to 5% increase each year.
Yes, they have this protection in there that you won't lose, based upon a...
But it's a pretty good gamble in a year when we anticipate gasoline to be increasing by 40% or 30%. I mean, the state's going to end up putting a lot of money in their pocket. That's where the real problem is.
Pretty good gamble for who, Steve?
The state's creating an index, so that will peg a price level for the gallon of gas in the month of July, which they think historically is the highest month of gas prices, historically, except for this past year when it's...
Every day.
Julie Kiefer, then Martha.
You said that this excise tax would be applied very early in the distribution chain.
Yes.
It reminds me of a discussion we had at the Environmental Management Council about what's good about a carbon tax. And what's good about it is that it's applied essentially the first time the fuel appears in your geographical area. And then it simply becomes part of the price thereafter, passed on through middlemen. But if the state is thinking of doing this for motor fuel to replace the sales tax, it seems to be a very nice opening for carbon tax.
And Martha Robertson.
Just to get this clear, so they're saying we should relax because we won't lose anything.
That's what the state taxation and finance say. They built into this
whole harmless.
The whole harmless. I will say that what was comical about the presentation was they kept on referring to this as a scheme.
Yeah. but what Steve said sounds more important was that we won't lose anything, but we also there's a limit on how much would come to the local community.
Right.
The problem is that if the consumer, the taxpayer in Tompkins County is paying the sales tax and or the excise tax, and then the full amount of that excise tax does not come back to Tompkins County because there's a 5% cap, the state keeps the money, the taxpayer paid the extra money on the gasoline that they purchased, and we don't have the support for the programs locally, so there's potential that they would have to pay more for the program, so they're ending up paying more in the long run.
In property tax.
So it's not such a sweet deal.
Well, we're going to move on, but thank you, David. Are there resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda? Jim Dennis?
And Michael, correct me if I'm wrong, I'd like to add Resolution P.
Yes.
Which is calling upon the governor and the New York State Legislature to refrain from enacting new public employee benefit mandates to assist in curtailing rising local property debt.
It takes 10 votes to add. All in favor of adding to the agenda? Opposed? That's added with 10 in favor and 1 opposed. I'm sorry, we didn't get a second for that. Is there someone who
second?
Frank Proto. Any other agenda, any other resolutions to add to the agenda? Leslie?
Resolution O, urging a greater state commitment to maintaining the safety and integrity of local highways and bridges.
That's moved and duly seconds. Ready to add to the agenda? All in favor? And opposed? That's 10 in favor and 1 opposed. Oh, you didn't raise your hand either. Okay. That's unanimous. Thank you very much. Just for sake of one department head who's here, I'm going to see if we can just shuffle the agenda for one item. Frank, could you move Resolution J, which is one of those member filed items?
I shall. This has a long title. Bob, it's your title. This is Resolution J, calling on the governor, the New York State Office of Mental Health, and the New York State Department of Health to ensure that any fiscal restructuring of non-inpatient mental health services include, 1, equitable assumption of the responsibility among Medicaid-eligible facilities and programs in serving medically indigent persons, and 2, fair commercial insurance rates and service authorizations for enrollees. And I hope I get a second.
Is there a second? Leslie Binklerborn seconds.
Would you mind if I asked Bob to just quickly explain? He was the author of the second to the last resolved, and that is one of the items that could directly affect us. So I asked Bob if he might speak to it, if that's okay with you.
That's fine. You can just come to a mic at one of those desks there.
Basically, what this is looking at is the Office of Mental Health and the Health Department is looking at restructuring the rates for outpatient services in mental health, primarily clinic services. So what this is trying to do is get some assurance that if rates are changed, that historical providers of folks that are indigent or poor have equitable rates. In our situation, the county has traditionally been, the local office has traditionally been that provider who will take all comers. So it's an attempt to assure if various providers get rates that are comparable, then different providers will have to also take indigent persons, and also that the local government unit or the mental hygiene authority will have approval for any rate plan or scheme, as it were. To in England, you know, on the buses and stuff, the government puts scheme for plan. It's an interchangeable word. That's kind of the core of the thing. You know, it also addresses insurance with the notion that sometimes insurance companies do not find a person eligible, and therefore that person goes to the indigent provider, oftentimes a county and a county our size, so that there's some equitability there. The bit that I added specifically really deals with when these rates are changed, the COPS add-on payments, which traditionally were state aid that the county decided where those dollars were going to go, there is money attached to our county operations, and it's a bit of a stretch, but I thought we should put it in there, that basically says that was a local decision, and if the rates change, all that local decision making about state aid sort of goes away. So we're basically saying that if we have a rate that we don't think is correct, we should be able to have some say in that rate. Whether or not we will get that's a whole other matter. But So that's kind of the long and the short of it. This fiscal restructuring is, by the way, it's a very complicated process that deals with the health department. I just left Albany listening to the director of Medicaid as well as the commissioner of OMH talking about this whole thing, and we really don't know where it's going to come out at this point.
I'll just give an overview. This is one of many resolutions that normally would go through a committee process, but because of a timeliness factor, trying to get these resolutions to enjoin or to urge or to cease and desist in certain actions to the state as early as possible. So that's why they're on as member filed. Dooley Kiefer?
Looking at the resolve you were just addressing, I had a lot of trouble reading this, and now that I've listened to you, I think I understand what it's supposed to say, but I think there's some strange wording in it. If I could look at the third line after a semicolon, it says, and that historically the distribution of that state aid was under the auspices of county mental hygiene local government to distribute. Mm-hmm. So the distribution it seems unnecessary to me. Historically, that state aid was under the auspices of county mental hygiene local government units to distribute for the care of mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. To get rid of those that distribution of. And if you begin it by saying, and since historically, then the fourth line that begins with that would have a capital T just like that in the first line. Is anyone following what I'm saying?
I did.
I've been driving for 2 days here, Zoe. So.
I did. Is that friendly, Frank?
It's friendly.
Friendly to the mover?
Yeah, I think it actually clarifies it a little bit.
Okay. Thank you. So as amended, are we any more discussion?
I have to ask Carol Chuck's question since she's not asking it. Is there a difference between outpatient and non-inpatient?
In the second whereas, second line.
Second whereas, second line. Yeah, and this came from NISAC.
I'm just asking you as a professional.
I think outpatient would imply clinic and non-inpatient is more generic.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Any further discussion? Are we ready to vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very
much. Thank
you. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it. Bob, thanks.
We'll go back to the consent agenda. These are resolutions not expected to be controversial that can be passed in a single vote. I'll read the titles and please let me know if you want to pull them. Actually, let me start with appointments since that's what I've got in front of me first. To the Personal Emergency Response Services Advisory Board, Greg Stevenson. To the Greater Ithaca Activities Center, Nathan Shinagawa. To the Air Service Board, Michael Stamm, Alan Peterson. And to the Recreation Partnership, Carol Chalk as the alternate county legislative representative. The resolutions, Resolution A is authorization to accept an award of a grant from the New York State Division of Criminal Justice Services. Resolution B, under Facilities and Infrastructure Committee.
Is that the revised one you're moving?
I'm reading the revised, yes. Authorization to execute construction funding agreement with New York State Department of Transportation, Ringwood Road Bridge over Cascadilla Creek. Revised. Resolution C, authorizing a lease extension with the Transportation Security Administration, TSA, in connection with office and other operational space in the passenger terminal at the Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. And Resolution D, authorizing supplemental consultant agreement number 9 with CNS engineers for additional design services in connection with the parallel taxiway relocation, Phase 3 project at the Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. Kathy Luther moves it. Do we have a second?
Second.
Let's limit being clear. 1 second. All in favor?
Mm-hmm.
Any opposed? And that's unanimous. Thank you very much. Move on to our standing committee reports. Our first committee is Human Resources Committee. Jim Dennis, Chair.
Thank you, Michael. Blue collar mediation this Thursday. Next meeting of the full committee will be April 3rd, probably a short 15-minute meeting before the next LEDGE meeting, which is, I believe, April 18th. I'll be requesting a executive session at the end to discuss county administrator search. information.
Thank you. Any questions?
And that concludes my report.
Any questions for Jim? Thank you. Move on to Government Operations Committee. Dooley Kiefer, Vice Chair.
The Government Operations Committee has not met since the last legislative meeting. The next GO meeting is Friday, the 14th of this month.
Thank you very much. Probably don't have any questions on that report. On to planning, development,
and... Is there a Mike Hattery resolution that you would like me to move?
Sure. I guess we'll do that now instead of a member file.
Well, I wasn't sure when you wanted it.
Let's go ahead and do it now.
I also don't know where it is, which one it is.
Let's see.
I guess it's resolution L.
Yeah. L, okay.
There's a, in your red packet, there's a substitute resolution. The only change I've made to Mike's individual filed resolution is to separate out some language from his original first resolve and move it up to the whereas, which is where that kind of language usually belongs. So I'm offering the substitute resolution that has my name on it, but it's truly Mike's resolution.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and move it?
Resolution supporting the governor's proposal to allow Tompkins County the option of increasing the fees for recording documents with the county clerk's office.
And is there a second? Martha Robertson seconds. Is there discussion? Dooley Kiefer.
I would like to ask this body whether in the first resolve they believe the word slightly should be retained or removed. It was part of what Mike Hattery wrote. When I look at the governor's proposal for increasing the fees, slightly did not seem to be an accurate adjective for that proposal, so I would suggest striking that.
Well, as it's moved, it actually is stricken at this point. So,
but I wanted to be as open about this as I could be, and if someone disagrees with that, I'm happy to listen to that.
Kathy Lucerera?
Thank you. Just to clarify for people who might be listening, what is the proposal raising it from? And to?
Sure, I'll ask again.
Oh, dear.
While you're pondering that, did we get a second from Dooley's? Who would like
Martha
a second?
Did.
Martha
did.
Right, okay. Kathy's out of the room.
I don't know, Kathy. I've seen it in writing at the last meeting, but I don't remember what the governor said. But the order of magnitude is maybe $3 a page to $5 a page, or $5 to $25. They're different amounts for different pages.
So it's more than doubling the cost, but as the resolution
explains... Not necessarily.
Well, the resolution explains that these haven't been increased for a long time.
That's right.
The reason I'm bringing this up is when I first heard about it, I thought, okay, another tax, you know, fee, it's a tax. But when I read the resolution and when I talked to people about it, I realized that this hasn't been raised in a long time and that there are associated costs. And
yes.
I'm going to support this because I think it's legitimate. But it is a big increase, so I agree with you that taking away the word slight is appropriate.
On the last page of what we got handed out in our red packet tonight from Steve Witcher and administration, the very last item shows the basic fee being raised from $5 to $20 and then from $3 to $5 on a per page fee.
Thanks for the clarification.
Frank Proto.
I'm not going to support this for the simple reason that we receive over $1 million and we have received over the years a certain amount of money from the State Archives and Records Administration through SARA to do the preservation of records. And while I'm sure that the county clerk can probably justify some increase, I think this is another, as Kathy began to say, a tax that's known by another name, and in this case it's called a fee. And frankly, I think that the county clerk has received over the years an enormous amount of money through state archives in order to do the record preservation, and I don't think that this is something that we need. However, we need to do. What the question I'd like to ask is, does this resolution say that the act of increasing the fee should be left with the county clerk? And if it's not, will it be determined by the state? I don't read it that way, but I want to make sure that if we don't pass this, God bless you, that the we will need state permission to increase a fee in the future. I don't understand it to say that, but some of these resolutions are a little complex, and I thought I'd better ask that one out loud. Is that something you can answer, Dooley, or is
my understanding
else?
Of the proposal is that counties will be given the authority to decide on their own whether to raise the fees and how much.
Okay.
And that would actually, my understanding is it takes legislative action, so we have the option.
It's not up to the clerk, it's up to us.
That's right.
It would be up to us as a legislature, not the state.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
And I'll just weigh in that I'm supporting this because it's not actually voting on increasing the fee. It's just voting on a proposal, urging the governor to include this, and giving us the option at some later point we could consider that. Are we ready to vote? All in favor of substitute resolution L, raise your hand. And opposed? If I counted correctly, that's 9 in favor and 2 opposed. That passes. Thank you, Dooley. And we'll move on to the next committee, Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, Martha Robertson, Chair.
We haven't met since the last legislature meeting. We meet next Thursday, that's the 13th of March. And I don't have any of these budget things.
Well, we'll
fill it out.
We'll dredge one up for you. Thank you very much. Budget and Capital Committee, Nathan Shinigawa, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mike. The Budget and Capital Committee met, what was that, I think about 2 weeks, a week and a day ago, and we discussed our goals and finalized those, and we also began not only to discuss finalizing our goals, but we actually started working on our goals, and we worked on three of them. Subsections of those goals. One of them in which is a discussion about the room tax, and specifically using some of the room tax money for economic development. And so we had an introductory discussion about that, mainly just kind of understanding how one would go about changing that, and we learned that it's actually a state law that we would have to change in order to get some of that money to be used for economic development, and then a subsequent local law change as well. That was more of an informational meeting. At the next Budget and Capital Committee meeting, we're going to have members of the Strategic Tourism and Planning Board coming over to talk about their perspective on this. And the committee does not have a position yet on taking some room tax money for economic development, but this is part of our discussion to look into it at the request of some of our committee members. I have two member-filed resolutions here that I'm going to actually bring up right now that pertain to the state budget. And the first one is Resolution M.
Nathan, can I just interrupt you for a second? I understand at the committee meeting that the budget calendar was also finalized.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes. And the budget calendar was changed because I neglected to realize that I would be in Little Rock, Arkansas on the day of our budget retreat. And so the budget committee decided to move our date to April 29th, I believe, and which is the fifth Tuesday of the month. Let me know if that works for you. It works for everybody in the budget committee. And so that will be our budget retreat date. Unless there's any serious objection.
All right. And the rest of the calendar, I think all committee chairs will get a copy of, because in the summer there's a period where issues and concerns regarding the budget should be on your individual committee dockets.
Yeah. Can you repeat that date, please?
It's April 29th.
Tuesday.
Yeah, Tuesday, which is the fifth Tuesday of the month.
Martha Robertson, then Dooley Keefe.
What time is the retreat?
I don't think we've, I mean, it's...
I think in the past it's been 6:30 to 9.
Okay. And on the economic development, the room tax for money for economic development, is there any conversation about how much or how you decide? Or?
No. It's, there hasn't been any specifics. I believe that Legislator Hattery is considering, after these presentations, to perhaps put a proposal on the table so that we can use that as a basis for discussions. But I don't anticipate that happening until the meeting after STVB talks to us.
And Dooley Kiefer?
It's gone.
Okay.
Sorry.
Oh, and another thing, too, is that we did discuss the role of standing committees in the budget process and thinking of clarifying that role. And what the committee kind of decided is that we urge committees, standing committees, to have the department heads within those standing committees bring up their budget, serious budget issues during the summer. Especially in June and July, I believe, or July and August, I forget which combination.
June and July.
And to bring budget considerations there, so that way it can be talked about, it can be fleshed out, that way when we don't go into the budget process kind of scurrying and not really knowing what to do with these serious budget problems. And so we urge standing committees to use that time.
Well, I think Dooley remembered a question,
I remember,
then Frank.
That's yeah. Right. Thank you. You had said that you would ask Nathan to have the budget calendar distributed to committee chair. Is there some reason not to send it to all legislators?
It'll go to all legislators. And Frank.
Nathan, I'm glad that your committee is interested in the standing committees reviewing budget requests. But what happens after the standing committees review and perhaps are educated in July and August, or right. June and July.
June and July, yeah.
What's the next step? Do they make a present? Do the departments or the standing committees then make a presentation to someone else?
Well, Frank, I don't think we didn't really go into that detail. Because actually one part of our discussion was actually seeing what kind of role committees used to play in the budget process and whether or not that worked. And I know in the past the standing committees oftentimes would kind of make, you know, or at least would were consulted heavily during the budget process, and then would almost as a front, you know, together, committee members would approach the budget in that way. But I think that we're kind of just getting at June and July should be a time where the department heads can go to those committees and really kind of work with committee members to look at their budget and what the challenges are, and work together to find solutions. So that way, when you get to the budget process, when you get to the full budget, what do we call that? The expanded budget committee meetings, that there's been more thought put into it. I mean, I don't think we have any specific proposals, doubt we will have any specific proposals saying that committees shall follow this specific process if there's serious objections.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you're not looking for, in the past, yeah. The standing committees used to vote.
Right. We are not.
That was passed on to the budget committee.
Right.
Now the expanded budget committee. You're not looking for that process.
No, we didn't. We were looking at kind of how they did it in the past, how it was done in the past, and I believe the consensus was that it wasn't that at least budget committee members felt that it seemed like an inefficient process and didn't really do anything. It didn't improve anything in the way in which it intended to, I think, is kind of how I'm saying.
Well, some of us dispute that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fine. Yeah.
And moving on to Resolution M, I guess you have a revised version?
Yeah. I move Resolution M, and look at the revised version inside of your red folders. The only difference is that that when I move this, I'm actually not including the second whereas is presumably in bold there. Other than that, I move the rest of the resolution.
Is there a second without that word in it? Jim Dennis? Is there discussion?
Oh, and I'm sorry, I should probably read the title, shouldn't I?
Sure.
Yes, I move Resolution M, calling on the governor and state legislature to end the practice of passing costs for state programs to county government and our property taxpayers.
And that's been seconded. Martha Robertson.
A couple of things. So you're including the resolve that's the second
yes, it
resolve?
Is the exact. It's the resolution that you have in your red packet, just not the presumably in the second whereas.
Okay.
Yeah. But it does have that that second to last word.
I would like to ask you about one word in that, and then sure. propose an additional resolve, which I'm.
Okay.
I'm sorry to be writing this on the fly, but let me start with the easier one first. Saying that the income tax has been significantly lowered over the last 30 years. From this budget presentation that Carol discussed before, it seems that it's been flattened in a sense, not necessarily lowered, but the progressivity of it has been flattened so that the higher, what used to be a higher bracket for higher right. income taxpayers has right. been flattened so that the highest tax
right. They've had like a 50% change, and I think that in their total income taxes, and I think that most middle class New Yorkers have only had like a 1 or 2% change.
Right, and so but you know if you right. make $40,000 a year, you pay the same rate as somebody who makes $40 million a year.
Right. So your language suggestion.
I wonder if you would consider just changing lowered to flattened.
Flattened across income brackets, perhaps?
That would be great, yeah.
Flattened across income brackets.
So you're taking okay. out significantly lowered and putting in...
No, just taking out lowered.
We can't be significantly flattened.
Yeah. All right.
This is flattened.
All right, flattened across income brackets. Is that what you got,
yep.
Nathan?
Flattened across income brackets over the last 30 years.
Okay, and there's a second resolve you want to...
I appreciate that.
No, I'm questioning that. According to this table, if you're at the top brackets, you're paying 5%, you're paying... The top 5% of taxpayers are paying actually less at a decreasing rate. And the curve goes
right.
like this. Mm-hmm. So that it isn't flat. It's at the lower amounts, you're actually paying... more tax than we used to, and at the upper brackets, you're paying less tax.
You're looking at it a different way. When you, what I'm talking about is when you go to the, when you figure out your tax, you go to the back of the booklet, and they say here, what tax bracket are you in, and if you earn 10 to 20, you pay this amount. If you earn 10 to 20 million, you pay this amount. The point is that those brackets, the rate at which those brackets our charged income tax has been flattened. It
right.
used to be much
because
more.
Middle, yeah, sorry.
Like used to be higher.
New Yorkers are like here, and then it used to be that you know higher income brackets were here, and now they're kind of like right here. So it's,
right.
So I'm hearing that has been accepted by, as friendly and by the seconder. Is that true, Jim?
Absolutely.
Okay. And you had another resolve you wanted to
add? Yeah. There's something in this paragraph. Let me explain it first. In the paragraph 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the fifth whereas describes the bipartisan commission and some of the things that they're going to be discussing about getting at the root causes and solutions about property tax. One thing they don't discuss is was also brought up at this budget forum is a circuit breaker that would essentially be would modify property taxes according to people's income. And without going into a lot of detail, there's actually an assembly and a Senate bill. So I wonder if it would be friendly to add resolve as a between the first and second resolve that we have here. Resolved that the Commission on Property Tax should also consider a circuit breaker such as that proposed by Assemblywoman Galef and Senator Little, Assembly Bill 1575, Senate Bill 1053.
I'm sorry, that won't be friendly, mainly because I don't know enough about that proposal, and I'm not sure about its implications for the county specifically. And so at this time, I'd like not to support that.
Do you want to offer it as amendment?
I would like to do that.
Is there a second to that language? Julie seconds.
I would, but I think if you're going to add the circuit breaker, it would be good to describe it a little more.
I have afraid you're going to ask that. I mean, I have. This,
It's not
edging into doing.
I understand. Yeah. I understand, but this is a one shot at making a statement to this commission.
Julie, can you live with this amendment going forward as worded without adding in the next explanation about circuit breaker so we can move to a vote on the amendment?
I'm concerned that Nathan doesn't even know what's being proposed. So
well, I know what's being proposed. I mean, we've discussed it. I mean, but...
If I can read, I
just don't understand the implications specifically for Tompkins County, and I don't want anything that will jeopardize our revenues, I guess.
I mentioned those two bills. None of us have had time to look at those two bills.
Right, and I haven't had time to read those specific bills. And even though there's a summary, an executive summary of a bill, oftentimes you don't find out what it really does until you read the bill, and I haven't had a chance to do that.
So further discussion on the amendment. Martha,
I apologize for not having a chance to get this to people ahead of time, but if I can just... To read a description briefly, a circuit breaker like the one proposed by Galef and Little, by the way, they're both Republicans, would address the shortcomings of the existing STAR program. This bill applies to homeowners who have lived in their current homes for at least 5 years and who have incomes of below $250,000. In counties outside New York City and downstate, the credit is 70% of the income by which property taxes exceed 6% of their income if their income is below $90,000, 7% of their income if their income is between $90,000 and $150,000, 8% of their income if their income is between $150,000 and $250,000. So there's a credit that is basically a sliding fee scale.
So this is background on the phrase circuit breaker in the amendment. Frank Proto.
Mr. Chairman, with all due respect to Martha and her reading, I really think if we're going to add that, we ought to pull this off, which I know you don't want to do, and have an opportunity for Nathan and whomever else wants to review these two bills to digest what it is that they wanted to digest. But simply reading that, and I know Martha's trying to educate us on the floor here. I really do think we have others that we really need to deal with here, too.
It sounds like you won't be supporting the amendment.
No, I don't think it's appropriate, but the because of the timing and the wording. We just haven't had time to review it, and I think out of respect for the Budget Committee Chair, we ought to perhaps let him have a chance to review it.
Further deliberation.
But there's, since Martha brought up the fifth whereas, I wanted to draw your attention to the second to the last line, because this will be important in one of the resolutions yet to come.
Okay.
Effective cap to hold the line on school district property taxes.
Okay,
the thing I have a concern about here is in that resolve that Nathan explained, it's not clear that any increase in the collections in income taxes will go to reduce mandated programs or come back to the counties in any other manner, shape, or form. So I understand what the intent is, but I'm concerned that the money still isn't. If we haven't said send the money back, and
well, Frank, I mean, actually, I know we're talking about the amendment right now, but Frank, with that, do you perhaps on that resolved at the end there, it says a more progressive income tax structure to pay for state mandates. Do you want to say to pay for state mandates on counties and school districts? I mean, then it's a little bit more specific.
That'd be okay with me.
Okay.
No, that's not what we're...
Is that okay with the seconder on counties and school districts?
Okay.
I think you've got it, Nathan.
Okay.
Thanks.
As amended on the floor, any further deliberations?
Yeah. On this amendment, I just want to say that this Property Tax Commission has only begun its work in the past couple months. There's a lot more that's going to be happening with it, there's no proposals out of that that's going to affect the state budget this year. We're talking about the state budget right now in these resolutions. I think we can discuss this in the Budget Committee. I'm open to that discussion, and I'm open to us having a resolution that addresses that particular proposal and submitting it to the governor and sending it over to this commission.
To that commission.
Are we ready to vote? Carol Chuck.
In the spirit that NYSAC has asked us to send these resolutions up in a timely fashion, if this amendment is going to hold up, are being able to send it. And I like the original resolution with or without the amendments, but if the amendment is going to hold it up, I'd prefer to make sure we get it out of here then, rather than fiddle with the wording.
The amendment on the floor, as Martha has moved, I'm about ready to go for a vote. Is there any final comment?
Yeah, I believe it would be stronger to include that. I understand that the sort of sending a message to that commission separately is also a good idea, but I'm just going to leave it in here and see if I get 8 votes on it.
Ready to vote on the amendment?
The amendment regarding the resolve?
The added resolve, starting with that commission, et cetera, et cetera,
like
and including circuit breaker assembly 1515 and Senate 1053. All in favor of that amendment, please raise your hands and keep them up. Opposed?
Okay.
That fails 1 to 10. We're back on the main motion as amended with a few wording changes, presumably, and counties and school districts. Are you ready to vote on that? All in favor of Resolution M? Mm-hmm. I see that's unanimous. Thank you very much. Moving on to Resolution N.
All right, I move Resolution N supporting the governor's proposal to restructure and augment the state's programs to assist local shared services and consolidation efforts. And I so move.
Is there a second? Leslie McLean-Claiborne, this is not revised. It's what's originally in your packet. Dooley Kiefer.
I would like to make some quick suggestions.
Sure, Dooley.
On this one. Hyphenate shared services when it's used adjectivally to modify something that comes after it. That's about 10 places in the resolution. But you have a bunch of items listed in the second whereas. The first one begins restructuring. So in line with that, I think the next one should be expanding, authorizing. Just ask the staff to make it parallel construction.
That sounds good.
And
okay.
In your third whereas, the fourth line,
mm-hmm.
there's an extra appearance of the word tax.
Oh, yes. Oh, I'm sorry.
And will result in overall lower taxation on local real property owners,
yep.
not tax owners.
That's for emphasis, Stuart.
I don't think so.
Are those friendly?
Those are
and to the seconder, Leslin?
And I have one
yes.
other one that I think may be a misspelling.
Okay.
In your bulleted list in the second whereas, the last one says $2 million for administrative assistance. Do you mean ANCE or ANTS?
It's ANCE.
Yeah. That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That's friendly.
With those friendly changes, any deliberations before we vote? Martha Robertson.
Yeah, I would like to strike the second resolved.
Okay.
That asks... that $100 million be spent on this. I think we've got all these other... well, if I get a second, I'll describe.
Is there a second to strike the second resolved, including the $100 million?
I'll second it, because
Frank,
I want to hear what everyone has to say.
Frank Frodo, really second.
Yeah, it seems to me if I'm sure it's a great idea to put $100 million into this, but it seems that we've got all these other resolutions saying that the state shouldn't be... spending money and that we need the state to be putting back the money that they're taking away from us, et cetera, et cetera. So it seems completely inconsistent to urge that they spend $100 million on this when I think there are higher priorities, which
so
is
the
like...
The state should look within its own budget to cut something else out if they think they should fund this.
Motion on the floor is to delete the second resolve. Is there further discussion? Are we ready to vote? All in favor? Opposed? 5 in favor. Looks like 6 opposed. That fails. We're back to the main motion. Are you ready to vote? Resolution N. With those very few modest changes. All in favor of Resolution N, please raise your hand and keep them high. Like 9. Opposed? 2. You got those? Thank you, Nathan.
Yep, thank you.
Jim.
Mike, a procedural question.
Sure.
I added Resolution P to the agenda. I did not present it under personnel. Do I have to wait till next
If you're feeling now? Overlooked, let's go ahead and add it right now. Resolution P.
It's Resolution P. calling upon the governor and the New York State Legislature to refrain from enacting new public employee benefit mandates to assist in curtailing rising local property taxes, and I would move that.
You're moving the revised version?
Yes.
Is there a second? Dooley Kiefer seconds. Is there discussion? Kathy Lou Serrera?
I'm just going to explain that my no vote has to do with, I just know that Nassau County Executive Tom Suozzi and New York State passed President Nicholas Pirro have never actually been considered friends to employees of the state, and I, because of that, I'm very suspicious of this resolution and its intent, and I'm just going to exercise my prerogative of voting no on this one, especially also because although there are many things about the Taylor Law that probably should be reformed, some Taylor Law reforms would eviscerate. Anyway, I'm voting no.
I have Jim and then Greg.
Excuse me, this is a very difficult resolution for me as a former teacher and a member of the teachers union, but as a legislator and also as a city council person, I've seen how binding arbitration has caused difficulties to local communities, and while it has improved, and I think it improved a lot of people who are in police and fire, and probably in many senses brought good people into the mix that want to be police and fire because of the salaries that are paid, not only locally but New York City and all around the state. My problem with arbitration is that police and fire have it, fine. They want it early on in the process. If binding arbitration were extended to many more municipal employees in New York State, in effect, what would happen is that localities probably would lose control over setting salaries for a long period of time, because as we've evidenced in our own situation, the road patrol ended up with binding arbitration a couple of years ago, and I'm not judging right or wrong, good or bad, but clearly when an organization has binding arbitration, they like to see how it works, and it makes it sometimes very difficult to go to the table and get a settlement locally. And for that reason alone, I think you're losing some control, a lot of control, if certain changes to the Taylor Law were made that would afford binding arbitration to all municipal employees. And another point of it is, yes, there are some changes to the Taylor Law that should be enacted concerning the ability of localities to negotiate in a fair and equitable manner. And I think some of the Taylor Law has gotten abused over the years by both sides in doing things, and I think people should begin to study and take a look at it. It hasn't been really dealt with for many, many years, and clearly it should be.
And Greg Stevenson.
I have a, first off, I guess, a question for Jonathan. Is it appropriate for a public employee, such as myself, to vote on a resolution like this? Very good.
Which arguably includes all of us.
Very good. if I can just comment for a moment, I hear what Jim's saying, and I don't necessarily disagree that there may be places to look within the binding arbitration system as we know it in the Taylor Law. But I think that this resolution asks for meaningful mandate relief and reforms of compulsory binding arbitration in a very broad sense. It's very generic. It to me infers that the whole system is bad, and to say that I think is a lot like to get rid of it would be a lot like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. It doesn't I think there's needs to look at things, but I think what this resolution says isn't the way I'd like to see it written. So I won't support this resolution either.
Any further discussion? Carol Chalk.
Yeah, I'm having problems with the first resolved. It's not the second resolved that I have problems with. It's the way this is worded. Any unrelated personal cost mandate related to safety, environmental concerns, you know, of people who work for the public could be affected, that might come up. So I, on that basis, I'm not in favor of it.
Tim Dennis?
Unrelated personnel costs also have to do with benefits. And there have been moves in the legislature, and, you know, this is really hard for me, but to extend health insurance benefits to all retirees at the level that they are when they're an active employee. And that would be a significant hit to every municipality in New York State, and it would force some municipalities out of the health insurance business, I think.
Are we ready to vote? Martha?
I'm going to support this because everything we've been saying about the problem with property tax, until and unless we've got some other way of funding the salaries of workers, we need to be able to, as Jim said, to have control over these issues and the negotiations. And I think we ain't seen nothing yet if this kind of change would go through.
Ready to vote? All in favor of revised Resolution P, raise your hand. Please keep them up. Opposed? I see 8 in favor and 3 opposed. Thank you, Jim. And I thank everyone for your patience regarding doing some what normally is committee work on the floor, because these are brought as member items and normally would have been discussed and had some of these questions answered in committee. We're going to move on to the Public Safety Committee. Greg Stevenson, Chair.
The committee met today to move today's resolutions. We'll meet on Friday, March 21st, I believe. And that concludes my report. I have two resolutions, much like the ones we've been working through already. Resolution E.
Wait, Mr. Chair.
Chair Frank.
Greg, I have a question for you regarding public safety.
My report wasn't that long. You can't have any questions based on that.
There was an emergency. There was a meeting dealing with emergency services that was held in Broome County last week, and it was sponsored by SEMO, and it was dealing with the anticipation of flooding. They wanted to head off any potential problems this spring. And I wanted to let you know, I spoke with Lee Shurtleff, and I've spoken with members of the in Steve's department and administration, and it seems that we were sort of informed, but not really. And because the southern end of the county, principally parts of Dryden, all of Caroline, a lot of Danby, and some of Newfield, was hit pretty hard 2 years ago in the flood, and we were not, unless you were a municipality, we were not able to collect anything for residents that were hurt in that. It would be helpful if perhaps, I know Scott Doyle, who is our planning flood hazard person now, but it would be helpful if in the future maybe we could have some influence for these outfits to let Lee know, or you know, as chairman of the committee, because of the inordinate amount of damage that was done, and no private property owner could collect a nickel on that damage. And I doubt that, did you know about this meeting down in Broome County in Binghamton?
I did not.
According to the paper, over 200 local representatives attended it, and
to the best of my knowledge, none of the 200 were from this county.
Oh, I also
checked. I checked with Bill Sesney as well to see if he was aware of it, and he was not. What? I'm sorry.
Assembly woman Barbara Lifton was there. Yeah, in Broome for the flood. You're talking about the flood mitigation. Yeah, she was there. She was in attendance.
Well, so 199 individuals were not from Tompkins County.
I hear you. And your point's well taken.
Thank you. Isn't that great to add that when you didn't even have that in your report?
I don't know how short a report has to be, Frank.
Resolution E.
Resolution E, urging the governor and the state legislature to include budgetary language to increase probation reimbursement to the statutorily required 50%. I so move.
Leslin seconds. Is there any discussion? Dooley Kiefer.
I'd like to offer one small change in the next to the last whereas. It's listing effects of high costs. A greater proportion of probation expenses resulting in layoffs, comma, reductions in services, comma, and or increases in property taxes. I don't think you can count on all three things going wrong. So it should be and or.
That's friendly.
It's friendly. All right. Ready to vote? All in favor? No, any opposed? That looks unanimous. On to Resolution F.
Resolution F, urging the governor and the state legislature to hold counties harmless for any state-mandated increases for district attorneys' salaries. And so move.
Do we have a second? Jim Dennis, seconds. Any discussion? Julie, are you... Your third whereas, do you want to change it?
I thought I had given that to Greg before his committee met.
Yep, it's oversight on my part. When the Public Safety Committee met to pass this, it was revised so that the third whereas in the last line reads costs, comma, with counties being responsible for, and then continues on as written.
So that's what's been moved.
I'm sorry.
Further discussion. Are we ready to vote? All in favor of Resolution F? Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you, Greg. I don't think you had any member filed, right?
Nope.
Okay. Moving on to Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslie McDean, Claiborne Chair.
WDIC met on February 27th. A couple of quick things to look out for. We are hoping to engage the county in discussion around a strength in diversity award for not just county employees or departments, but members in our community, since we're all engaging, who are doing things to continue to promote healthy diversity and inclusion within our community. So look forward for more information about that. We're continuing to roll out the diversity statements to varying departments and agencies, and we're excited about that. And we are also, one of the things that we recognize as a committee is we're working diligently as we can, but trying to do a lot of this work does require more staff time, and there isn't a dedicated body, and so we're hoping that with the hire that would happen in the personnel department, that there would be some more time for the footwork that comes out of the committee, some of the things that need to be done to continue this work. So those were the main things we've been talking about, or we talked about at our committee meeting. There are others that you'll have more information about at a later date once we flesh things out.
Thanks for the heads up. If there are no questions, we'll move on to Health and Human Services Committee, Frank Proto, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Health and Human Services Committee will meet at 3 o'clock tomorrow. We have an exciting agenda, which will include just some highlights. We're going to have a discussion about the COFA
space, which has been on our radar screen since we had the old Space Needs Committee, if you'll remember, as it relates to the court system in this building. In addition to that, we're going to have a discussion about the recommendations that the State Task Force on Preschool Handicapped Children, that whole program, and there's a resolution under member file resolutions that's going to speak a little bit to that. Would encourage you to come if you have an interest, and I'll have a longer report for you at the next meeting. But there's a note on the agenda that, if I realize tomorrow at 3 o'clock is going to come very quickly, if you have any questions about material that's included in the packet, if you could make an attempt to clarify it with the department head or whomever before you get to the meeting, that could speed this meeting up a little bit.
So your committee and you as chair have not been able to get away from space, really, as much as you've tried.
We've been a spacey committee for a long time.
Committee, if you ever retire, we'll put on your plaque Frank Proto, Space, the Final Frontier.
We are going to revisit the location of the new health department at tomorrow's meeting as well.
Sorry, I got it started. Excuse me, I didn't mean to get that going.
You've just lost your audience.
Exactly.
Resolution G.
Resolution G, that sounds like one I have, Mike. Resolution G, I'm going to move all the ones that were filed as member items, and I know Dewey has some revisions that she's proposing. I'll let her describe those to you. Urging the state legislature to oppose the proposed shift of the state's historic share of public assistance to Tompkins County, and I'll move it.
Is there a second? Leslie Dean Claiborne seconds. Is there a discussion? Julie Kiefer.
I think what you're addressing in this resolution is very important. I made some changes because the title addresses just this historic shift, the division between state and local shares. But with the body of the resolution is very specific about a couple of actions. And I think that the introductory language in your version of the resolution would be language I would commend to Chair Kaplink-Allaire to put into a cover memo as all of these resolutions go to our legislative representatives at the state level. I think that if you were willing to consider as friendly the removal of the first two whereases and to begin the resolution with the historic look at the split that you're actually addressing in this resolution, it makes it much clearer. And I have moved the reference to increasing the county's share by 2% and decreasing the state's share by 2% to the second whereas. So I've saved that from the original first one. And that's really all I've done. I thought by shortening it, it didn't lose anything, and it made it clearer.
Are those friendly, Frank?
Let me turn to you, and before we make that decision, is it your intent to put together a cover memo that describes
yes.
those very things?
Absolutely.
And it will describe it regarding every single one of the resolutions?
Yes.
Steve, when these came from administration, were these boilerplate what NYSAC had proposed?
The majority of them were. We worked with them a little bit, but not much.
You don't think that'll what Dewey is suggesting for the first two whereases is going to water this down?
Not at all. I mean, what's important is the title. As long as you're passing the right title, they'll go on the scorecard correctly.
Then I'll agree that all the changes Dewey's proposing are friendly. With the caveat that you're going to do a cover memo.
And the seconder is okay with that?
I'm fine with it.
Okay.
I should mention one other thing. I'm sorry, Frank. The last whereas, I added language saying with county budgets already in place in 2008, which is a recurring theme in several of these resolutions.
That's right.
And that also seems really important.
And that's friendly, Frank?
Point out.
Sure.
Friendly to Leslin. Okay, we're ready to vote.
Friendly to the friendly, because there's a county's budgets, apostrophe,
It should either be our county's budget or it should be all counties' budgets. You're absolutely right. And I don't care which it is.
Let's discuss that. I'll accept it as friendly.
We'll make it plural for all counties.
All counties, yeah.
All right, everyone know what they're voting on. Are you ready to vote? This is a revised, this is substitute resolution G. All in favor, raise your hand. And that's unanimous. No opposed. On to resolution H.
Resolution H. Urging the governor and state legislature to remove Tompkins County from the fiscal and programmatic responsibility of the preschool special education program. I'll move this, but I really want to speak to it.
Is there a second? Martha Robertson seconds. Frank?
Before, I don't know if this is one that you're proposing changes to as well, Gary. I don't have a revised one. But the concern I have here, earlier in this evening, there was a resolution dealing with trimming the impact of taxes on school districts, and I brought that to your attention.
Yes.
This move by the state, the intent is a nice one. It saves us the liability, but it shifts it to the school districts. This is the program that a couple of years ago, when I chaired the health committee the last time, we asked that there be an increase in the contingent fund to at least anticipate a shortfall in the program for Tompkins County. I think it was $400,000. We didn't have to use it, thank goodness, but we have never had a seat at the table with regard to this program. We are responsible for paying the bill. And if my memory serves me right, and in spite of what Tyke Randall thinks, a lot of the time my memory does work, this cost us about $2 million in local share. Is that about right, Steve? Every year. The concern that I've got, and I checked with a school district board member, is they're aware that this is being proposed at the state level also. And all this is, if we vote this in, which will say it's proposed to save us on our county property tax bill a certain percentage, what it will do is perhaps raise the school tax portion of the property tax bill. So the same constituency that we all represent, at least the most familiar one I'm with, the one I'm most familiar with is the Ithaca City School District, is going to be hit, perhaps, with an increase in their school taxes in order to cover this. So I may be a reluctant supporter of this because it trims down our responsibility, but be aware that proposing this to the state just simply shifts the burden to the school tax. And that's a real concern of mine. And I really would like to hear some discussion about how you feel about this. And I see my colleague, Mr. Dennis.
Well, you may be surprised, Frank. I think it's a shell game, obviously, and it's a shell game that is going to be fairly expensive for the Ithaca School District and all the others who run special ed programs. But to that end, the district, it's my sense, and I have some fair knowledge of it, is looking to change the special ed program. Special ed historically has been pull-out programs or separate classrooms, and children would be in the least restrictive environment. Now they're looking to move the children who heretofore had been in classrooms with spec ed teachers and aides to move them into the whole classroom situation, moving the people with them. But there, down the road, one can see the special ed program being really changed and having a greater impact on what
classroom teachers will have to deal with in the long haul. So they may be able to save some money in the traditional special ed program, but it'll have an impact on the level and the quality of the education that will be delivered in the other classrooms.
But is there a potential for raising your school taxes?
There's always a potential for raising your school taxes.
Okay. I raised this point when I spoke with Senator Winter and Deb O'Connor from the Ithaca City School District was there. We had that little exchange about that. And essentially, this is an attempt to put the cost closer to the people who are actually making those decisions, as opposed to us. So although it will be a shift, it at least gives them the responsibility of, oh, we're making this service to this child. We have to bear the brunt of it, or a significant part of the brunt of it. Martha.
I mean, I think that's exactly what's needed. It's the same idea as the Medicaid local share, a cap on the local share or elimination of the local share. We're not making the decisions about what the eligibility levels are and what services are included in Medicaid, so why are we paying for it? The same thing with the special ed program. I just don't even understand why counties are in this at all.
Yep. Are we ready to vote? Dooley Kiefer and then Frank.
The next to the last whereas, I don't understand. Does the state currently have a responsibility to reimburse counties 59.5%?
Yes.
Yes, they do.
And where does the other amount that adds up to 100% come from?
I believe that's state funded. So we've...
So if we're paying 59.5% mm-hmm. now. The state doesn't reimburse us that, does it?
No, but we pay 100%, and they reimburse us 59%.
That's right. That's right.
Of the cost.
Okay.
Some date 2 years down the road, after we spent
100%. Yep.
And now that 59% is supposed to come from the school district.
So it's not improving at all this delay in reimbursement.
No.
Shouldn't we be asking for that
G-word.
To be directly leave us out completely and don't delay?
We could. It's approaching our two-hour mark. I don't want to be...
I didn't know what this was about. I'm having trouble understanding it, and mm-hmm. I want to make sure it asks for what we really want. And it's not clear if it does.
Frank Proto.
No, Dooley hit right on what I was going to draw your attention to, was that next to last whereas. Thank you.
Are we ready to vote with these understandings? All in favor of Resolution H as moved? I think that's unanimous. Thank you very much, Frank. On to Resolution I.
Resolution I, urging the state legislature to oppose the proposed shift of 100% of the cost of juvenile detention facilities to Tompkins County. I'll move it.
Is there a second? Greg Stevenson seconds. Is there a discussion?
Yeah.
Frank?
Just to clarify, in the third whereas, I hope you will support this. In the third whereas, it says secure and non-secure detention.
Mm-hmm.
The types of facilities in our county that those deal with could be, it could be Camp McCormick, it could be the women's facility out at the Gossett Center, it could deal with the Good Hope Detention Center, and there's a potential, in trying to clarify this between yesterday and today, there's a potential that it could affect part of the George Junior Republic, which is now known by a different name. But the concern certainly is the county should not be responsible for picking up what the state ought to be paying for. So I sincerely hope you will support this one.
And Dooley Kiefer.
I drafted something that adds to this resolution the fact that county budgets for 2008 are already in place in the third whereas, and inserts the word juvenile before detention facilities in the body of the resolution the way it is in the title. and didn't make any substantive changes, Frank, and I hoped you would accept my suggestions as friendly.
The
substitute looks fine. It's along the same lines as what we did on Resolution G.
Okay, so those are accepted as friendly, and
yes.
Greg, they're okay with you a second? Okay, are ready to vote. All in favor of Resolution I, substitute language? That looks unanimous. Thank you very much. I believe you've already passed J. We'll move on to K.
And K, urging the state legislature and the governor to support local public health initiatives.
Is there a second? Tyke Randall? Frank Proto?
Real quick, in the fourth whereas, I want to draw your attention to the wording that says local, which offers funding for local public health leaders to obtain ongoing education, da-da-da-da-da. Some of that could translate into a program that a lot of us have been trying to get some more money into for years, and that's to help the home health aides. That we clarified that that could very well help in that arena. The sixth whereas, I want to also, I'm glad that Ken, is Ken still sitting
yes.
in the back? Good. The sixth whereas that deals with new chronic disease funding includes appropriations for healthy eating coalitions and the Healthy Schools Act. I want you to remember that Cooperative Extension has gone into the schools for years to help them develop programs for healthy eating. And I think that some of this money that could come out of this particular initiative could certainly be funneled to a program like Cooperative Extension to continue that initiative. We don't have to reinvent the wheel, is what I'm saying. We already have the mechanism. So this is one certainly to consider supporting. Thank you. Dooley, I don't see any suggested changes in the wording.
I didn't prepare anything, but in reading this
but
over...
go ahead, if you want. The second
whereas, Tompkins County provides services in their communities and are consistent leaders. I think this looks like a boilerplate whereas, which might have originally said whereas counties provide. And I would suggest either taking it out because it's not necessary to the thrust of the resolution, or making it say Tompkins County, its communities, and is a consistent leader, if you feel you want that in there.
So it's and is, Frank, or you want to pull it?
I'll be guided by your...
I'd love to keep it in and keep make it its and is.
Okay, let's keep it in.
And that sounds friendly, and it's friendly to the seconder. Are we ready to vote on Resolution K as minorly modified? All in favor? No opposed. That's unanimous.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Frank?
I have a question I want to ask you. We've for over an hour, been talking about these resolutions.
Yes.
And every once in a while, we have a discussion about how important it is to pass these on to our legislators, and now we're going to have 62 counties that are going to pass similar resolutions. Do you really think that these are going to have an effect, because the governor and the state legislature are certainly aware that we don't want taxes to go up, we don't want services to be cut, and we don't want mandates to survive. What effect do you think resolutions like this are going to have?
I appreciate the question. I think this week all counties have been asked to do a variety of actions, including things like press conferences. We've chosen not to have a press conference, but actually pass resolutions which have, you know, substantive wording that can be analyzed. If all counties do indeed, whether it's press conferences or resolutions or other actions, press the state, I think it could have a similar consequence to capping Medicaid, which was cohesive action across the state on that. So I did speak with Senator Winter about this. He said, look, weigh in early, weigh in often. This is what we're doing. I think we're doing it in a very cogent, rational, methodical, and I'd say content-filled way, as opposed to press conference with any words can come out of your mouth, and it sounds good, but you don't actually have the weight of a legislature behind you.
Then I would suggest that when we copy these, and perhaps Kathy is going to do this anyway, I notice at the bottom a lot of these say New York State Legislature. I would suggest we change that to send them directly to the individual legislators that represent us, in addition to anyone else who you want to send them to. But if they're supposed to have the kind of effect, then I appreciate what you said.
Is that the consent of the body, that we would copy our own representatives? Okay, I can do that. Thank you. Ready to move on to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Leslie McBean, Claiborne Chair. Do you have a question, Jim?
No, go ahead.
The F and I met on the 21st of February in a very fun and unusual version. We had some ad hoc members. We were happy to have you all. And Carol, thank you for enjoying our meeting so much that you wanted to become a regular member of F and I. We welcome you. Couple of really quick things. You already passed, and the consent agenda, the extension, lease extension for a TSA at the airport, that's of note. We spent a good deal of time talking about the proposed Town of Lansing Sewer District. Is that still around tomorrow? No. And so there's more information to come on that. It's a small cost to the airport in the beginning if this just does go forward. But the revenue over the gain over a 20-year period of time looks to be a lot more lucrative. So we're continuing to talk about this. I think this information is also going to go to another committee. I think it's GO. I could be wrong.
Okay.
About it. So we'll get more information. It's not going to affect the airport in terms of its space. Where the lines and so on will be. So stay tuned for more information. We got an update on Brown Road. According to Commissioner Marks, we're looking at an anticipating closing date of May 1st. And for those who are interested, that might change one way or another, don't know, but that's anticipated. For those who are interested, the Facilities Division will maintain the master file or any information concerning Brown Road, and so you can ask anything associated with this project, and so anyone who wants to review that information and see where things are can get it at the Facilities Division. We talked some about the disposal of the Bix building. It's one of our facilities, just a little bit. We're beginning the conversation on it, and there may be some more interesting prospects for the use of that space. Or building that we can talk about in the future. Continue to look for space for Office for the Aging, which is a big deal. We know that the court is always trying to kick us out as well as need their space. Office of the Aging has outgrown their space. May not be there often enough for my own personal needs and realize that, wow, we're sitting on top of each other. So that's some continued discussion with Lifelong to see where that would end up. I want to mention to you all I think that was it. Those were the main things that we talked about at F&I. And we met this afternoon again just before this legislature meeting to approve Resolution O, which was added to the agenda.
And if there are no questions, why don't you move that?
Sure.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jim, did you have a question?
Leslin mentioned Brown Road, and there was a Brown Road, the committee, building committee met, and there will be putting out proposals for design, and that's going to be, hopefully interviews would be done here in March at some point, and the legislature could then make a decision on what group is going to do the design and all of that consistent with moving that building program together.
Thank you.
Cool beans. Thank you. Resolution O, urging a greater state commitment to maintaining the safety and integrity of local highways and bridges, and I so move.
Is there a second? Tyke Randall? Is there discussion? This is added to our agenda tonight. No discussion? Are we ready to vote?
There were a few wording changes. I'm trying to find it in my other thing. Dooley, if you get there before me, go for it.
Dooley?
Well, I remember one of them.
Okay. I can
in
go
the
there.
Second whereas, inserting in the second line after development and revitalization, comma, and functioning.
Right. Of our schools?
Of our schools, yeah.
Is everybody there?
In the
third whereas?
In the fourth whereas, breaking it apart into
two
whereases.
Yes, four. So where you see the semicolon and then while, while becomes a new whereas. In the very first resolved, Tompkins County, instead of applause, appreciates the governor's recognition. And we will spell out in that very resolve what the DHBTF stands for, so Dedicated Highway and Bridge Trust Fund, although it's being spelled out before. In the resolve, since it's the very first resolve, we will have that name spelled out again. And instead of ensuring in the last, not last, second to last resolve, instead of IN, it's an EN, ensure the safety in the second to last resolve, third line, the safety of local transportation systems. I think this was, that was it. Is there anything else to
there's a comma, the last resolve, there's a comma after the words.
Look, don't get testy with me.
What is it?
Commas.
Oh, okay, sorry. I take it those are...
Those are the proposed changes, minor, but makes a difference
okay.
in the resolution.
Given that those are friendly, are we ready to vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I thank everyone for their extreme patience. This is not our usual way of doing business to walk these through at this level, but we wanted to get them up to the state. Frank Proto.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask Steve a question I neglected to ask at the beginning of the meeting. Steve, I read recently that the governor was proposing a cut in state aid to community colleges and also an increase in the tuition rate. Do you know if, I'm surprised we didn't have a resolution dealing with that one, but do you know what the status of that is?
No, it's included
it's
in this
part
packet,
of this.
Okay. It's a $50 increase or decrease in state aid, I believe is what the recommendation is, or the proposal is.
I heard that they were raising the tuition by $50 and they were cutting the contribution by a percentage to their share for the one-third. And I, if it's in here, then I'll read this. I'm sorry. I didn't have this before the meeting.
Okay. Just the analysis that we got was the impact of the governor's 2008 proposed budget on TCA 3 comes primarily from the reduction of the full-time equivalent base aid for community colleges. It's a $50 reduction in the full-time equivalent aid, and it translates approximately a net of $100,000 decrease to TC3.
Thanks.
Okay. So you could do another resolution at some point.
Yeah.
Do
that. Next meeting.
Maybe next.
You can be in touch with President Haynes, because I know the community college is doing a lot of lobbying, and he anticipates that to be restored.
Yeah, one, I should probably comment that we were just working with departments at this stage, and we have approached the agencies, and they're supposed to be getting to us on Friday, and then we hopefully will have another package of impacts.
Okay. We're ready to move to minutes of previous meeting. Who wants to move minutes of February 19th? Greg moves them. Tyke seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. And move to adjourn to executive session. We'll take a break. Jim Dennis moves. Nathan seconds. And we'll break the cameras to break down for 5 to 7 minutes. Thank you very much.
Did we say why are we going into executive session?
Purpose of executive session is for personnel purposes.